Well, I think the first thing that I want to do is to prove to you that perhaps dates are no longer an alternative crop. And so we'll start out. So believe it or not, in the United States, we have over now 14,000 acres of dates. And we're not talking about the Chinese dates, although I will mention that when I teach my date and citrus production class, we do introduce the students to the Chinese date as well. In Riverside County, there is almost 9,000 acres. Imperial County, almost 2,000 acres. Inyo County, which is near Death Valley, California, has 25 acres. If you went to the ASHS meetings a few years ago in Las Vegas, maybe you went out there. And in Yuma County, we have almost 3,500 acres for a total of about 14,000 acres. In Mexico also, there is 4,300 acres in various areas. The most commercial areas are in Sonora and Baja California, though there are a little bit in Baja California Sur and in Coahuila as well. So totaling between the two countries, a little over 18,000 acres. The production for 18,000 acres totals $132 million in the United States and $12 million in Mexico, totaling almost $144 million. Most of that comes from Riverside and Imperial County, California, because they have the oldest orchards, whereas in Arizona we have orchards which are quite a bit younger. And there is a growing date industry in Mexico. The Mexican government is actually supporting the planting of medjool and deglet nor dates in Sonora and in Baja California. And as a result, we expect to see the value production of Mexican dates increase quite rapidly. The locations of the industry then, the historical beginnings of the industry were here in the Coachella Valley around Palm Springs, Palm Desert. We have some also in Imperial County in the south end of the Salton Sea. Also over here, which is called Bard, which is part of California, but also in Imperial County. We have some here in the Yuma area where I'm located, some here toward the Phoenix area, east of Yuma, eastern part of Yuma County, also in Baja California here, and in the state of Sonora. But all basically all some 14,000 or 18,000 acres within this particular area of southwestern United States and northwestern Mexico. Well, palms, well, they're a monocot, one of the few crops, fruit crops that we have that are monocots, Ericales order, Ericaceae. There's 13 different species, of which date palm is one of them, and they're native from all over the place, ranging from the Canary Islands in the east, or actually to the west, all the way across northern and central Africa, the southeastern part of Europe, southern Asia, Turkey, southern China, and Malaysia. Now, the date palm isn't native to all of those areas, but the palms themselves are. Well, why do we call them dates? Well, the reason it's Phoenix dactylifera, and its origin is likely Iraq or the Arabian Peninsula, or perhaps my friend from Persia says they're from Persia. There's a lot of discussion about that, depending on where you're from. They're named after the Phoenician word for date palm and the Greek word for finger, dactylos. Or possibly they're because of the fact they live in the heat. Today in Yuma it was 113 degrees Fahrenheit, perfect for a date. That's 45 degrees Celsius. Well, they can regenerate themselves after a fire, as can the phoenix bird. So what's different about a date? Well, they're said to live with their feet in the water and their heads in the sun, which means they have to have plenty of water. And yet they thrive in arid, high-heat areas to produce fruit. That's why date palms grow only well and produce fruit in hot, dry desert climates throughout the world. Lack of heat causes the palm to be unable to mature the crop before winter, and rain during harvest season leads to fermentation and loss of quality, which is a big problem some years when we have, as we might have this year, a monsoon. Well, they've been around for a long time. So these are some 2,000-year-old perfume bottles found in Israel made from dates. They basically took the dates, they packed them in sand, they put something down the middle to simulate the seed, then they poured the molten glass through the mold, and they made a perfume bottle made of glass some 2,000 years. And here's a Roman mosaic with date palms. So date palms have been around a long time. We don't know for sure where the domestication occurred, but in the Fertile Crescent for sure, and perhaps a secondary source in North Africa. And if you ever go to North Africa, you'll find, for example, in Morocco, that each individual river valley has its own collection of cultivars which are distinct from the river valley that might be 40 or 50 miles away. Well, the limits of date cultivation, of course, most of it here in North Africa and the Middle East, but extending as far east as Pakistan, and there's a little bit in the southern hemisphere. Most importantly for the industry is in Namibia, northwestern South Africa. There's a little bit in Australia, northeastern Brazil, and possibly in northern Argentina, as well as in the United States and in Mexico. Well, if you've ever been to the Middle East, you'll see great oases such as this. This is the Al-Asa Oasis in Saudi Arabia. And then if you go to North Africa, you'll see something else. This is the Draa River in Morocco, and it's just a sea of date palms as far as the eye can see. And if you go underneath there, you'll find citrus, and you'll find henna, and you'll find alfalfa, or lucerne as they call it. You'll find animal production, you'll find peach trees, all underneath this overarching canopy of dates. And if you look at the insides, they have very, oftentimes very small and narrow irrigation channels for which the farmers, some of which have farms of less than one quarter or one fifth of an acre, irrigate their individual date palms. And that's inside the oasis. And there are entire villages with minarets and all that are inside the oasis like this. Well, naturally, after 700 years of living in Spain, conquering Spain and living there for 700 years, the Arabs brought the date palm to Spain. And the best place for a date palm to survive in Spain is in Murcia, which is near the city of Elche. And so there is the Palmeral del Elche. And naturally, because the Spaniards got used to eating dates, then they moved it with their explorers to Mexico. And so they introduced the date into Sonora, Sinaloa, Baja California, and they were all seedlings. And they performed rather well, especially in Baja California. They started exporting them as soon as 1837, and they introduced them also into Peru and Chile, but they didn't perform quite so well there. And down in the southern part of Baja California, you can find little oases of seedling date palms that are some 150 or so, almost 200 years old, of seedling date palms that came obviously from the Spanish explorers. And this is a picture of a little oasis along a little riverbed in the southern part of Baja California. Well, in the United States then, they brought them northwards as the Spaniards did, and they planted them at their at the missions. The Jesuits brought them north in the 17th and 18th centuries, and the first planting in California was in 1769. And dates were planted by the Spanish missions wherever the climate was favorable for its growth. And there were nine missions established in Arizona from 1687 to 1781, and none of them survived all that well in those particular locations. It was a bit cold, but in California they also planted them. And here's a picture of 1848 of the Mission San Diego de Alcalá, San Diego, California, and here you can see the date palms off to one side. So early California date plantings then began in about 1850. They brought seedlings to J.R. Wolfskill near Winters, California. That's near the site of University of California at Davis. And then again in 1862. They planted them in Sonoma County as early as 1870. Then they began to bring offshoots rather than seedlings. And they brought them from Egypt and Algeria and the Persian Gulf, and they planted them near Tulare in the Central Valley in 1888. However, there were not enough heat units to mature the crop before the killing frost, and so they found that these were not suitable locations, nor was the Spanish mission in San Diego. However, when you planted them in the Coachella Valley, first one in 1898, they found that the fruit produced there was so superior that they really didn't consider planting them anywhere else. And so these are actually the sum of the original seedling date palms planted in the 1850s by J.R. Wolfskill at the Winters farm near Davis, California, and they still exist. So They're approximately 150 years old, and there they are, all from seed. So as the United States Department of Agriculture was interested in bringing in new varieties, they began a date importation program. And they brought them in from the Middle East beginning in the 1880s. And we heard about the plant explorers, about Meyer and Chandler, and there was Popano and there was Swingle. And they coordinated them with the USDA and University of Arizona personnel, and they brought them in, and they planted them, and they brought them from Algeria and Egypt and Arabia, and they planted them in Phoenix and in Las Cruces, where they didn't survive very well, and in Yuma and National City near San Diego, and in Pomona and in Tulare and in Indio. And in Indio they did very well, and in Yuma they did very well, at least better than some of the rest, except when the Colorado River flooded. Now, it doesn't flood anymore because of the dam, but when it did, it killed everything. So they kept bringing in hundreds and hundreds of offshoots from the Middle East and North Africa beginning in 1900 and continuing through 1908. Thousands, I should say. And they understood then that seedlings were not the best way to plant dates, to propagate dates, because dates do a lot of outcrossing. And so if you plant seedlings, they found that it would take a quarter or a half a century of hard work before you, and then you might only be partly successful. So seedlings were out and offshoots were in. So this is Bernard Johnson. He planted in California and in Arizona. He brought in 129 offshoots in 1903 and 3,000 in 1912 and 15,000 in 1913. And he planted them all over the place in the Coachella Valley and in the Yuma region, mostly, among others, the Deglet Noor variety. And here he is next to one of his plantings. So, well, how did they get them out? Well, they went out. They hired people, they cut the offshoots, you can see here they are, they load them on camels, they put them in a camel caravan, they take them to the port. They have a picture taken before they leave the port. This, I believe, is the port of Algiers. They pack them in sawdust, they put them in boxes, they put them on the boat, and they ship them around to San Francisco or Los Angeles, and in the very beginning, of course, without the benefit of the Panama Canal. So it took them a long time to get them there. Then they put them on the train or the wagon, and they brought them to the Southwest. Now, sometimes it wasn't quite as successful as that. I have to read this to you because it is also recorded that around the turn of the century, two Americans narrowly missed death when they filched some offshoots of the famous Khalasa palm from the prized gardens of King Ibn Saud of Saudi Arabia, father of the present King Abdullah. They were accredited as geologists and sought permission to survey the region. And so by day, assisted by native workmen, they dug holes to study the soil and rock formations, but at night they crept among the palm trees, pilfering the precious offshoots. Ibn Saud got word of their activities and sent an Arab force swooping down on the American camp one night. Swinging their scimitars, they wrecked the tents, scattered the equipment, and killed most of the occupants, but two of the Americans managed to escape on camels, taking with them five of the 200 offshoots they had gathered. And several weeks later, they arrived in Arizona. The offshoots they brought with them were the parent trees of the many superb specimens of Khalasa date palms that we have today in this country. And we still have Khalasa, although it's not one of the favorites anymore. So in the 1920s through 1970s, they had about 500 acres in Phoenix and up to about 5,000 acres in California. And they had their own packing sheds. And sometimes when they were small, the wives would help the farmer husbands in curing, packing, and selling the fruit. And they relied on direct sales to the consumer by mail order or local retail. And you can still find this direct sales in the Coachella Valley in particular today. The varieties, many of the varieties, but the most common ones which we still have which exist are the Barhi, the Kadarawi, the Zahidi, and the Deglet Noor. And the Deglet Noor by far is the most popular one that we still grow today. But you can also find local varieties. There's ones called Honey and Empress and TR, which exist, which some of the local growers still have to sell to the populace today. And they became exotic. So here is luscious Erewhon fresh dates in a deluxe package from Phoenix. And here is Long's palm-ripened Deglet Noor dates from Long's Date Garden in the Coachella Valley. And then they even went further than that. I love this picture. They were going to actually build a hotel where you could get the full Arabian experience among the date palms in the Coachella Valley. And here are the ladies in 1920s type style dress. This picture was taken in the late 1920s on camels. Remember, this is in the Coachella Valley, California, led on by, I suppose, the workers of the hotel, so that you could go directly by camel to the hotel and have an Arabian experience there. Well, the Great Depression came along in 1929, and that never really happened. But still, in the Coachella Valley, there is a definite Arabian influence. Indio, desert playground, scenic guide and map, National Date Festival. That's what they call the county fair in Indio, California, the National Date Festival. And here is the picture of the camel. So there's a certain amount of Arabic influence. In fact, there's a town over there, used to be called Walters, that they renamed Mecca. And still you can find dates marketing locally, not only locally, and here's Shields Date Garden, okay, and here's Hadley Fruit Orchards, and these not only market locally but internationally, and of course, in the part of Shields, it never hurts if you advertise such as that, the romance and sex life of the date, free in sound and color. And you can still go see that movie at Shields Date Garden today if you want to. Now, the medjool date is a little bit different, okay? It comes from Morocco, and Walter Swingle imported it originally in 1912 because it was a very large date, bring a higher price, and it was known as Dátila del Berbería in Spain, which means Berber date. Comes from Morocco, and he actually imported it first in 1912, but somehow or other those palms disappeared, and so there was a second introduction of this particular variety in 1927. He went to Boudinib, Morocco. He brought the dates in. They had problems with Bayoud disease there. They still do, so they had to put them in quarantine, and you couldn't put them in quarantine in Arizona nor in California, so you had to put them in Nevada, right at the point of Nevada. So they found a Native American who was living there who, it turns out, was disabled, and his wife was blind. And they actually had to extend the Indian reservation so that he could actually have title to his own land, and they planted these 11 offshoots there, and they figured that because he was disabled and his wife was blind, he wasn't likely to leave the farm much, and that's why they chose him, okay? And he planted these things, and 9 of the 11 survived. And then after 7 years, they were moved to the USDA in Indio in 1934, and the other two were dug up by the dog. Okay? So that's what happened. And from those, then, the entire medjool industry in the U.S. came. Okay, so here's Boudinib, Morocco in 1927, and here it is in 2007. I've been to Boudinib, Morocco about 4 times. It's an amazing place. And these are the original 6 palms which came from six of the 9 originals that got to the Yuma area. And these were planted in 1944, and thus they are 71 years old here, and they're about 60 feet tall and medjools. And so about 99% of the dates that are grown where I live in Yuma, Arizona, and across the river in Bard, California, are the medjool variety. Well, why the medjool? Well, it's large, it's not too soft, it's not too hard, it produces a lot of offshoots, it produces more than 200 pounds of fruit when mature, and you plant 50 trees per acre, that's 10,000 pounds per acre, and then you get about $3 a pound, and that's about $30,000 per acre. And the longevity is unknown. The Deglet is a smaller date. The medjool is a larger date, but they're pretty much the same as far as their nutrition. They have a lot of potassium, so really the only difference is that one is a little bit smaller and one's a little larger. So we do some planting. They either plant from offshoots or via tissue culture. This is the USA. This is Israel tissue culture. Okay, this is our offshoots. This is tissue culture plants. We're getting more and more tissue culture in the U.S. Here it is in Morocco, in two different locations. We irrigate by flooding or by pressurized up to 220 gallons of water per tree per day when they're mature, when they're 40 or 50 feet tall, so they do use a lot of water. We fertilize usually conventionally. About 70% of the acre is conventional. About 30% is organic, mostly with chicken manure and that kind of thing. We pollinate. There's 49 female trees for one male. We collect the male flower. We dry the flowers. We shake the pollen from the bunch. We dry the pollen. And then we pollinate, sometimes using blowers like this. Sometimes using mechanical pollination. This is from Saudi Arabia, a little unit, and this is a larger one from Arizona. Then the fruit must be thinned. Okay, here's an unthinned bunch. Here's a thinned bunch. This is medjool. In Israel, they thin by cutting the strands, whereas in Arizona, we thin by removing fruitlets from the strands. It takes a lot of workers, about $2,500 per acre to thin the fruit, and about 60% of the fruit's fallen on the ground. After that, then we put some rings in the bunches. This is for medjool, for some air movement, because we don't want the dates to ferment. Okay, when it gets a little bit of moisture in there and they begin to get sweet, then we put bags over the tops. Tie the bag, and the bags generally in Arizona are made of nylon or a cotton nylon mix. Whereas if you're bagging Deglet Nor, they typically use paper or craft bags. And the difference is because for the Deglet Nor, they only need to protect against the rain. Whereas for the medjool, we need to get some air movement in there. We need to have a little bit of heat to ripen the fruit a little bit faster and protect from the birds. We harvest by lifts. This is the United States. This is by Israel. Okay. So basically what happens is they go through, they lift the bag, they run their fingers through the bunches, and then the dates fall into a round basket. And you can see the basket right here. And then it's lowered to the ground, and then the baskets are poured in these trays. Whereas with the deglet, you actually still, many growers, you still climb the date palm. Of course, there's some support there so the guy won't fall out of the tree. You cut the bunch with this large hook. You lower the bunch to the ground, and then after you remove the bad dates, you shake the good ones into a bin. Back to the medjool. Once they're in the trays, you harvest them. They're in the trays. Then there are some new harvest aids that are being done, harvest platforms where the trays are actually up in the baskets with the workers. And then you dry them. And you can dry them traditionally via the sun, or like they do, and we do this in the U.S. sometimes, and in Mexico, this is a large area that's got concrete on it where they purposefully have for drying the dates. Or we dry them artificially at about 50 degrees C, down to 22 to 24% moisture content. And this is a kind of a greenhouse thing where they have some fans, and this is where they have forced air that's hot, almost done. Then we grade them and sort them, both varieties. Mechanically, there's new mechanical sorting, some electronic eye sorting going on, and then we pack them. And marketing with medjool is either traditional in the large box like this, 11 kilograms, about $11 to $12 a pound, or value-added products. This is date clusters. And for deglet, either whole fruit like this, or if you want chopped dates, value-added products. Or if you don't think you eat a date, you really are if you're having a Clif Bar or a Lara Bar, or value-added products with almonds or pistachios. We have some date research. I won't go into that. Carob moth, tissue culture methodology, pollination thinning, and leaf nutrient standards are important for us to look at. And finally, there is some landscaping done. Okay, so this is how they transport the palms, $100 per foot. And here, finally, is Father Antoine's date palm on Orleans Street, just a few blocks away in 1841. And here is Canal Street today. That are Deglet Nor dates right down across from the hotel here. So, eating dates can be habit-forming. And I'll thank you for your attention.